Welcome to The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach podcast. Machon Siach at SAR High School, honoring the memory of Belda Kaufman Lindebaum, Zichrona Livracha, is the research arm of SAR High School, where faculty bridge theory and practice on matters of Jewish education, curriculum, and culture. I am your host, Shmuel Hain, Rosh Beit Midrash at SAR High School. Our producer is Avi Bloom, and our engineer in the booth is Greg Schmidt. This episode on experimenting with ungrading at SAR is part of a series of podcasts on the role of college admissions in the life of our high school and the impact that the broader grading ecosystem has on student learning and on the faculty-student dynamic. The guest host for this series of podcasts is Dr. Rivka Press-Schwartz, Associate Principal of SAR High School and Director of Research and Programming Development at Machon Siach. Rivka has taught, The guest host for this series of podcasts is Dr. Rivka Press-Schwartz, Associate Principal of SAR High School and Director of Research and Program Development at Machon Siach. Dr. Schwartz has taught an ungraded class at SAR High School for several years. Dr. Schwartz is joined by two SAR faculty members, Ms. Becca Glassberg at SAR Academy and Ms. Sarah Medved of SAR High School, to discuss together their ungrading experiences and to reflect on what they have learned.
And welcome to Machon Siach's Grand Conversation podcast. I'm Rivka Press-Schwartz, and I'm joined on this podcast by Ms. Becca Glassberg of SAR Academy and Ms. Sarah Medved of SAR High School. We're here today to talk about our experiments in ungrading and changing the way that grades are given out in a classroom and how that affects the classroom dynamics. I'm going to start by asking my two guests to introduce themselves, to tell you a little bit about what they do, and to share a little bit about how they came to an interest in trying ungrading. Becca, do you want to start?
Sure. First of all, I'm so excited to be here, so thank you for including me. I am the Director of Technology at SAR Academy, and I also currently teach social studies to eighth graders. A couple years ago, when I was teaching sixth grade, and actually I think throughout my teaching experience, I always felt that grades didn't necessarily motivate my students, and it made me really rethink my goals and what students were accomplishing through the tasks that I was giving them or through our discussions. And those goals I didn't feel were necessarily met by grades. And I also felt that students depended a lot on the grades that they received and felt like it really meant something about them. So I would say that through listening to lots of different podcasts and following different educators through professional learning networks on different social media platforms, I found this topic of ungrading and began researching different ways to implement learning without grades. And I guess that's how I came to it.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Sarah, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and how you came by your interest in ungrading?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm Sarah Medved. I've been teaching here at SAR High School for the last 10 years. I teach English, 9th and 10th grade, and also now a senior elective, which is an ungraded senior elective on reading and writing New York City. I'm also the faculty advisor for the student newspaper, The Buzz. Check it out. We have a website. I came to an interest in ungrading just through my experience as a teacher and seeing students who would become so discouraged by the lack of an A, even though they had a lot to be proud of in terms of their growth as writers. And I think that the system that we are in, unfortunately, is motivating students towards the wrong ends. So if they're motivated by the grade, if they're motivated by the desire to get an A, then that's what they're thinking about, as opposed to thinking about whether they're learning, how much they're growing, you know, what they can do just to take that next step, right? It's all about, well, how do I get the points? How do I get the extra credit? As opposed to, all right, let me actually look at this feedback and think about, you know, incrementally, how can I grow? So the idea of trying something different and rewarding students for growth and allowing them to think more about their own growth just really appealed to me as something that I think emphasizes our values in a way that is more consistent than grades.
And I'll just round out the picture by talking about my interest in ungrading. Like Becca, I'm a history teacher, now mostly in 12th grade, for a long time in 11th grade and 10th grade as well. And I came at it from a somewhat different angle, which was watching the pressure and stress that the college process and the college admissions process placed on our students, and the intense fixation and focus on grades and the transcript as something that genuinely might make a real difference to them in their college admissions, but in a way that crowded out their ability to be interested in or excited by learning. And so conversations around the test weren't about, oh, I didn't understand this, can you help me understand it? It was, oh, you took off 3 points. Was that really worth taking off 3 points? Maybe you should have only taken off two. And that endless negotiation and haggling and the amount of student stress and will this be on the test and what are you asking about and was the question fair or not? And genuinely seeing the toll that it took on my students drove me to my interest in ungrading. Which leads us, I think, to the next question, which is, you know, Becca, you talked about learning about ungrading online. I did as well. And one of the things I saw is that there are really many different things that get called ungrading. Ungrading is not all one thing. And so I'd like each of us to talk about how we do ungrading. Does that mean there are no grades? Does that mean students give themselves grades? Does that mean students give each other grades? Does it mean something else? So if you could talk a little bit about how ungrading actually plays out in your classroom, what it looks like, what your students do. Sarah, you want to start?
Sure. So my class is, as I mentioned, a class on reading and writing New York City. We read a lot of different genres of work about New York and talk about different ways that authors approach New York City as symbol and their experiences with it. And then writing is largely more on the creative side, where students are emulating the different styles of the authors that we're reading and thinking about the techniques that they use and applying it to their own work. So in terms of the way that grades work in the class, students assign themselves grades at the end of the semester based on criteria that we lay out at the beginning of the semester. And we do a lot of reflection along the way. So along with the more formal writing pieces that we're doing, students are also doing written reflections. They have a process journal where after they complete an assignment, they reflect on their process, how much time they spent and on what, and whether they would have wanted to do anything differently. And then mid-semester, we do a larger reflection piece. We set goals at the beginning of the semester. And at the end, students will assign themselves a grade by looking at the criteria that we laid out at the beginning and assessing how well they met those criteria. So it's not ungraded in a literal sense as much as it is self-graded, where the onus for assessing their progress is on the students. But also, the focus is less on whether they've produced perfect works of literary genius and more on whether they've put in the effort and whether they're seeing growth in their writing.
Great. Thank you. Becca, you want to talk about how ungrading works in your classroom?
Sure. So just to piggyback off of what you had said earlier, there are so many different ways to do ungrading, and there are some people that may feel that this is the way, this is the definition of ungrading, and this is how you do it. But with a lot of areas of teaching, there are so many different ways to achieve a goal. So I would say that some of the different elements that I use in my classroom begin with a focus on accountability of growth and removing the grade meaning a number or a letter, which I explained to the students is not a representation of who they are. In my class, in middle school, where grades aren't necessarily necessary for them moving forward in school. So I focus a lot on them understanding where they are in their own skills. So I'll tell students, if we're doing a writing assignment, some of you may be starting at this point with your writing skills. Some of you may be starting at a different point with your writing skills, but we all have room to grow. So we focus on the process, and that process is maybe attacking an assignment, working together. The students will submit something, and I'll give them feedback. And that feedback must be actionable, meaning when students receive an essay with a B plus at the top and red and marks all over it, research has shown that many of them just throw that away and it's not meaningful. So the actionable feedback without even necessarily a goal towards this is going to be like a finished final product, the goal is really the learning and growth. So what they do with that feedback might be different on different assignments. So let's say one essay might be read through the feedback, respond. You know, I'll use comments on Google Docs. And then the students, instead of resolving those comments, they have to respond to those comments. So that way, they can actually track the areas that they're working on. In some classes, I've also moved that to the next level where in the beginning of the year from the first assignment, they'll take those comments and build their own checklist, like a writer's checklist or a research checklist or just a checklist that represents the skills that they're working to grow in. And then use that on the next assignment to process and edit. So that way they're actually, as opposed to using some kind of external standards, they're really looking at how they're growing.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's really interesting. It wasn't exactly where I was planning to go next, but maybe let's just run with that, which is sometimes we think of students as the young people being the super innovative and creative ones who want to change things in the classroom. My mother, who is still now a high school principal going to work every day and has been in the classroom for more than 50 years, always says that students are the most conservative people in the classroom. They just want to keep things the way they're familiar with and used to. I'm not sure I agree with the claim most conservative, but there is a sense in which kids don't always want us to change. They've learned the pattern. They know how the system works. They know what to do. And then you come and you say, we're doing something totally different. And I wonder if you could speak about that. Were there any places where your students said, we don't like this, or we don't want to do this, or this doesn't feel right to us? Any student pushback, anyone who said this system doesn't work for me?
I think that especially in middle school, keeping directions very specific and scaffolding assignments into different broken down parts has been very helpful when students might expect guidelines or they might want to know how is this being graded, right? That might be where their mind goes, as opposed to these are the different steps that you're going to take. I think that what I see is they really appreciate that guidance along the way. And in my role as a teacher, through ungrading, have been able to take myself out as the judge. You know, I'm not going to be judging this at the end. I'm actually, like, what's my goal? I'm here to help you grow. And one thing that has been really amazing to see, and I hope that answered your question, but is students who get stuck at different points, speaking through with them the goals of the assignment. You know, for example, let's say we're learning about a topic in history and I want them to process that topic in a writing assignment and show their critical thinking skills. If they get stuck at a point of maybe they didn't understand what we were learning or the article was too hard, taking a step back with that student and understanding where the obstacle was for them. I think in an ungraded class, I'm seeing that students are a little bit more open to thinking about what are the parts that are hard for me and how can I get through that and talking it through.
Yeah, I've also definitely seen that this is a really hard shift for many students to make. In both of the years that I've taught my ungraded course, there's definitely been an adjustment process. And I think some students who never fully adjust to the ungraded mindset. I recall the first year that I did this when I gave back the first assignment with detailed feedback but no grade. I had a student ask, but how are we supposed to know what grade this would have gotten if we were getting grades? You're not supposed to know. That's exactly the point here. And I think it was really difficult for them. And then this year when I did it, I did with my class early on to spend a little bit more time talking about the philosophy of ungrading and why I felt it to be important. So we made a list of pros and cons of grading. And at first, the class was listing all of the pros of grading. Grades hold us accountable. Grades keep us motivated. Grades are going to make sure that we're working hard. And I had to push back on that and ask, okay, can you think of any downsides to grades, right? If the reason why you're working hard is for the grade, what are we losing if that's the case? And it really took a little bit of pushing for them to think about it. But I think by the end of the semester, the students really came to see that changing the motivation, changing the end goal really did help them think about what they wanted to get out of the course, you know, what they were doing it for themselves and not for me and not for college and not for some external force, but really what they could get out of this experience personally.
There's so much to pick up on here and so many things to follow up on. I'll just say, going back to our earlier conversation about what brought you to ungrading, I actually, because I came to ungrading through it a somewhat different path, right? I was concerned about college pressure and everything else. And also because oddly, maybe incongruously, the first 2 years that we did ungrading, I was doing ungrading in an AP class, which is a pretty funny thing to do ungrading in a class that has a big high stakes test at the end. And so I was doing ungrading those first 2 years, giving my students tests. They took regular tests, not long discursive feedback, but regular tests. And I gave them back the tests scored, but not graded, meaning I marked things right, wrong, partially right. I just didn't put any numbers on them. And as you said, Sarah, that was the big adjustment for kids when they got the paper back to sort of try to figure that out and sort that out. But my experience with the kids was somewhat different, which was because I was coming into it from a different angle, the angle of lessening pressure and stress, I found that for some kids, what didn't work for them about that was exactly what you mentioned, that they said, we're not as motivated to study. We're not mastering the material as well. And they said it not in terms of we don't care about your class or we don't like what you're doing. They said it in terms of hard-nosed economics. We have to do a cost-benefit analysis. We only have so much time to spend studying. In our other classes, we're getting grades that go on our transcript. And in your class, we are getting a grade, but we're giving it to ourselves. And that means we all understand that means we have a little bit more wiggle room and a little bit more leeway. And so it would only make sense for us to commit the time to studying in another class and not in your class. And I heard that from students in both directions. Some students said it's so nice to have at least one place where I don't have to stress about the grade. And other students said it didn't really work for me so well because I feel like I would have been more motivated or I would have done more work. I enjoyed the learning. I enjoyed the material when I was in the class. But I would have done more work if I knew that you were giving me a grade at the end. And for me, what came out of this, and here I guess we'll move to talking about what was surprising that came out of this, I didn't actually end up feeling like I accomplished my goal, my initial goal of lessening stress and pressure in the college process. It's almost like, you know, gas expands to fill the size of its container. The pressure expands to fill. So if I took away pressure in my class, the pressure from other classes would just expand to fill that space. I somehow didn't really feel like overall, maybe it was just too little. One class becoming ungraded wasn't going to lessen the burden. Although 1 year, Sarah and I had some students who were in both of our classes, and that was interesting. But what emerged for me from this experiment that was actually really powerful and meaningful and is what came to make me think that it's so valuable and what wasn't what I expected at all, wasn't what I went into it looking for, was the ways in which it shifted the power dynamic in the classroom. So much of what happens, and again, Becca, maybe you can tell us if you experience this differently, but at the high school level, that implicit fear of the grade and the transcript and what that's how that might or might not affect the kid means that there's a power dynamic in the classroom that we might not always be paying attention to, or sometimes we are paying attention to it in the sense of if you don't X, then your grade will be lowered by Y, which is a way of exercising power over students. And once I said at the beginning of the year, I'm not giving you a grade, it really shifted that in the classroom in a way that I do genuinely feel that I hear much more authentic student voice about themselves, about their own learning, and about me and about my teaching. Once it's not, I'm afraid if I say this, you're going to lower my grade. And it's true. Sometimes very empowered and vocal high school seniors will say all kinds of things to you. But I don't mean all kinds of things rude, disrespectful. I mean their own assessments of what we're learning and how we're learning, what they like about it, what they don't like about it. And we as teachers, I'm not sure we always elicit or get that feedback. And there was actually something very powerful that I did not anticipate in giving students more space to articulate their own voice, say for themselves what they thought the criteria of success should be, let them invite them to let me know how they thought I was doing in the classroom without fear of then she'll lower my grade. And so it's been that shifting of the power dynamic in the classroom that I've found interesting and surprising. It wasn't lessening the college pressure on kids, which I'm really not at all sure I accomplished. So I would ask each of you, either biggest successes of ungrading, if you want to share that, or biggest surprises, to the extent that your surprises are successes. Things that didn't work, we could talk about some other time. But biggest surprises, biggest successes, either or both. Becca.
Okay, that's a tough question. But I definitely agree that my role in the classroom shifted, just like you're saying, from, I guess, judge, right? I think in middle school, it's a little bit different where I don't think the grades for the children are really focused on, am I going to get into college? And I would say I definitely had a few that did feel that. And I always told them, I promise you, this grade is not following you to college, when I was giving grades. But becoming the student's coach or partner in their learning and really helping them internalize that that the goal of the teacher in this classroom is to help you grow. And I think coming out of elementary school into middle school, they probably did feel that way from elementary school teachers to some extent. And then in middle school, it's a little bit more pressure. So I think that that for me was probably the biggest success. And even when I feel the most unsuccessful at how I'm accomplishing ungrading, because I know we've spoken about before, it's hard. It is time consuming.
We'll come back to that because that's definitely something we want to talk about.
Okay. But I think becoming their partner in learning or their coach in learning. And I'll just give a quick metaphor to that. So my daughter's on a competitive dance team. And whenever she goes to a competition, after that competition, and those are competitions that are graded, she gets a score. But afterwards, the competition sends videos from each of the judges. And you hear the judges saying their feedback over the video. And it's so helpful for her growth. And I speak to the dance coach about this because I really relate this to how I think about my classroom and why feedback is so important and why that should be the piece that helps students progress in their skills, because she'll listen to that feedback and then apply that next time she's practicing. So think of the goals of these assignments as practice. You're not coming up with, I don't know, they're writing a book to become a published author. Like, they're writing essays to essentially become writers or to become proficient at different skills. So, you know, that's like an interesting comparison and how I see my success, I guess, in how ungrading is working.
Yeah, for me, one of the great pleasures of ungrading is the fact that it puts reflection on the front burner. So we're always stopping to talk about process, about how kids are feeling, about, you know, like you were saying, Rivka, that how they're feeling about what we're learning, how they're feeling about their own learning. And it also helps them pay more attention to certain things that might go by the wayside a little bit when their focus is on grades. So the criteria that I give them includes a lot of markers of effort and investment, including class participation and being a part of the conversation. So I've had a number of students who have said very explicitly that in the past they tend not to speak much in class, but in this class, which is quite discussion-oriented, they find themselves pushing themselves to be a part of the conversation and to make their voice heard because they know that that's something that's valued in this course and that we're reflecting on all the different ways that you can be engaged and invested and in your growth. And I think that has definitely been one of the successes. It's just getting to see students place their attention on some of these additional skills that are extremely important, right, that are student skills, investment skills, engagement skills, rather than thinking entirely about product, but about the way that they get there and thinking about that kind of consistently all along the way.
So interesting that you say that. Because my class, again, was structured pretty differently, not this year, but for the past 2 years, it really was structured more around more traditional summative assessments on the way to the AP. And yet when I asked my students to give themselves their own grades and to write self-assessments in support of that grade, a number of them wrote about pushing themselves to participate more in this class than they normally do, or even then feels easy and comfortable for them, going, as we like to say in high school, beyond their comfortable limits, because they wanted to demonstrate to me that they were invested or engaged, and there wasn't going to be the automatic number on the test to demonstrate how much they were putting in. I did give my students a feedback form after each test, asking them, how many hours did you study? Was this more or less the same, different than you would have for a graded test? So I was collecting that data all along, but it was super interesting that a number of my students also said, one student wrote, and again, I found this so powerful, this eliciting student voice and hearing things from kids that I never would have heard if I was just putting a number on their test. So once I said, how do you think you're doing and what's your reflection and what's your self-assessment? One student said, in this class, I started to speak in class at the end of the first quarter. Normally, I don't get comfortable enough in a class to speak until the end of the first semester, but I wanted to push myself in this class to show you that I was engaged. Now, I would have heard that he was speaking after the first quarter, and I would have written his progress report or his anecdotal, you've started recently to contribute more in class, that's great, keep it up, without knowing that that was a conscious effort on his part to do something more to demonstrate engagement. And that's what I got by eliciting his own voice and his input and his self-assessment. And as you said, Becca, stepping to the side as I am the authoritative voice of evaluating what's happening in the classroom. And it was that for me that's really become so powerful about ungrading. But I want to go back, Becca, to what you said about time, because listening to you and Sarah talk about the feedback and about the rubrics and about the rounds and rounds of I give you feedback and then you iterate and then we assess it again and see how it's going. This sounds like a lot of work for all of us. And so I want to ask you, if you think of that work as like those are startup costs, we're doing something new, we've never taught this way, and it's going to take a few years of a lot of investment to figure out how to do this, the same way the first few years we were teachers and preparing lessons and assessment, it took a tremendous amount of time. And then at some point, even if you're now revising your curriculum or your lessons every year, you know what you're doing and it's not as much work. So do you think this is just a startup cost, but eventually it will be more sustainable? Or do you really think that one of the things to consider in thinking about shifting to ungrading is that it will, in an ongoing way, demand much more of teachers' time and therefore either may not be scalable or teachers might not be able to do it for as many students or as many classes. So what do you think about those work burdens that come with the switch to ungrading? Sarah?
Yeah, I would definitely say that this is one of the areas where I don't feel that I have it all figured out. I mean, there are plenty of areas of this ungrading experiment where I don't feel that I have it all figured out, but this is definitely something that still poses a challenge. And I've been fortunate that the past couple of years, my ungraded class has been on the smaller side, which I think does make it a little bit more doable, though it's still extremely time consuming. But if you had a larger class or more than one ungraded class, how to make that work, right? How do you give this level of detailed personal feedback without just sucking up more time than we have available as teachers? I think that's a really important question and one that I'm very much still working on. Because again, like a big part of this ungrading is, you know, really getting to know our students as more than numbers, as more than grades, understanding those details of their learning processes and how they're growing as specific individuals. So again, it doesn't work. I mean, or maybe there is a way to make it work on a larger scale, but it doesn't feel like something I quite know how to do yet. And I'm definitely still interested in working towards a more scalable model.
Becca?
I think that the initial investment in ungrading takes a lot of time. But I also think that being a great teacher in general takes a lot of time. So I don't know that it's specifically the ungrading that felt not necessarily overwhelming, but felt like I don't know if I could achieve all of the goals of ungrading in my class and maybe just need to take it one step at a time. Just like on a much larger scale, thinking about if I'm doing this in my classroom, and I know the two of you are doing this in your classroom, at what point can we really spread out that students can fully change their mindset about how they see themselves as students, right? That's going to take time too. So I don't know. I guess as a teacher, right, being a great teacher takes time. And I think that with the initial investment of that time to focus on areas of ungrading that are attainable for us as teachers and for our students and giving our students time to reflect on their learning, I think that it is minimized over time, but then as people who are in education, we're all constantly trying to grow and progress, so we may also find other areas of teaching that's going to take time in another way. So I don't necessarily think it's specifically ungrading that takes a lot of time as a teacher, but maybe as we're focusing on this specifically, like if I really want to give the best feedback to my student and have them respond to that feedback, and then me respond to that response, that's going to take a lot of time. I think there are a lot of tools out there, you know, if I put my tech hat on for a second, there are a lot of tools out there that can be helpful in that way. And I'll say I've showed my students this, and there are different ways to try, but with different AI tools coming out for teachers or just in general to kind of play around and see how that's working, I have and have spoken with my students about this as well, thought about how can I utilize these tools to maybe help with feedback. And then at the same time show them how AI can sometimes hallucinate and give the wrong feedback. But it's actually helpful when they know that the feedback is coming from me as the teacher or from another tool. they should look at it and analyze it themselves. You know, if sometimes a student might say to me, you know, you said this was a run-on sentence, but here's why I think it's not, that's great. You know, I'm a person. I may not always get it right, and that's okay. And I think that's also okay for them to see that too.
Yeah, I'll also name something else, which is aside from the burden of time, there's like a psychic discomfort. None of us is a newbie. Some of us are farther away from rookie status than others, but none of us was a newbie when we started this. And going back to that, I really have no idea what I'm doing every single day. And every single day feels like I'm going to walk in and try this. I hope it works. I don't know what's going to happen in my classroom today. There's a lot of adjusting to that. I think in my first year, I was much more upfront with my kids about that. But even now I say it when a student pushes back on the way I'm doing something. And I say to them, okay, tell me how you think it would. This is an ungrading experiment. I'm not claiming to have exactly the right way worked out to do this. And so I don't think that at this stage of my teaching career, yes, Becca, we still continue to put a lot of work in growing as teachers, but learning something new about American history and incorporating it in my course lets me still be in a position of mastery and expertise and comfort and saying I'm running my classroom in a different way and I'm acknowledging to my students that I'm completely new at this and might do it wrong and I will adjust it in response to their input or pushback, if you want, in part because I'm not sure the way I'm doing it is the right way. Puts me in a less comfortable and commanding position in the classroom. And to be clear, I think that's a great thing, but I also think that's another part of the reason that teachers might experience this as difficult, not just the demands of time, but the way that it puts us in a different position in the classroom. I think I want to ask you now for like your great ungrading story. What's a story that happened with a kid, with a class, with something, and you just say, wow, this is what this whole thing is about. And I'll start, because this is a giving credit to Becca's story. My first year, I did ungrading by myself. Second year, we were doing ungrading in SAR. The three of us worked together as a group. We met regularly. We spoke. We shared what we were doing. And we were heading to November parent-teacher conferences. It was Becca who said, well, if the idea is that the kids evaluate themselves, why are you giving parent-teacher conferences to the parents? You should bring the kids to the conferences, but not as is sometimes done to hear the teacher's feedback. You should bring the kids to the conferences and let the kids give the feedback. I was like, I should do that, especially since my students were high school seniors. So I told them all that's what we're doing. I did give them an out. If that felt too uncomfortable, I let them fill out a self-evaluation form that I would share with their parents. But most students showed up. And it was fascinating. It was so interesting to hear what the kids said and the way the kids described themselves and their own learning experiences in the class. Including, I always tell this story because I just love it so much. A kid was distracted all the time on her computer, or I thought she was distracted all the time on her computer. She was multitasking, doing other things all the time on her computer. And she came into conferences and she said, I know you get frustrated that I'm doing other things all the time on my computer, but every time you call on me, I know the answer. There are some kids whose brains work that way, and they're very good at that. And as a teacher, it could be frustrating. There are a lot of kids when they're distracted, but there's the occasional kid who can be doing something else and still picking up enough of what you're saying. When you call on me, I know the right answer. So I think what I'm doing is okay, and I should be able to keep doing it. And just that she could articulate that, she knew what she was doing. She knew that I was frustrated by it. She had a case to make for why she thought she should be able to continue doing it. And she felt like she was being granted the space and the voice and the agency to make that argument instead of I'm just lowering her grade in investment in learning because she's distracted on her device in class. That was because I invited her to come and say, how do you think you're doing and how do you assess that? And how do you evaluate that? And I don't think that would have happened otherwise. And then other kids who shared in all kinds of other ways what the learning experience of the class was like for them. I sat there all night taking notes. Instead of usually what happens at conferences, which is I give over information and parents take notes, I sat there all night taking notes on what the kids were telling me about their own experience of learning. And I've done that at every set of parent-teacher conferences ever since.
I'm so thrilled that you're doing it. And, you know, this year I didn't ask my students. I told my students at the beginning of the year that's something that I do. Last year, I had a little bit of pushback in the spring. Like, I'm so busy, I can't come. A lot of students push back a little bit more. And I had spoken with the administration in the school, in the middle school, about this concept, and she loved it. I would say this concept of having students see themselves as a letter, and especially as a middle school student, going into high school, right? Because Rivka, you were saying you were thinking about that pressure that students have coming from the future external force. But a student in middle school who, let's say, you know, is a B student, how do you see yourself as a person if you're a B student? What does that mean? Right? So I think that in general, maybe I'm not thinking down, I'm not able to articulate like one specific example of fully viewing my students, or actually being able to see my students not see themselves in that way. And I think after doing ungrading for a couple years, I think I started doing ungrading in my class really officially in my mind in a sixth grade class, and those students are now juniors, so I don't know how many years ago that was. But students who see themselves as an A student, and then they always have to be this way. Or if you see yourself as a B student, then maybe, you know, you're a little bit different in the classroom. Or if you see yourself as a C student, right, that really means nothing. And you might even see yourself that way in different classes, as you know, and it kind of guides who you are in that class. And I think when students are entering high school, they should not see themselves that way. They should not see themselves as a letter. That was the hardest piece, I think, to overcome for me in ungrading, and then to have my students fully wrap their minds around this concept. And I really, you know, it's been a couple years, but I don't think I've seen my students seem to feel that way in my class. And, you know, I should probably ask them, but I really think they know now that the focus is what we're learning, what are the skills that I'm practicing. You know, there's content because we're learning history, and how am I showing my analysis about this topic? How am I critically thinking? You know, I think they understand that those are more of the goals, as opposed to like building a persona around this number or letter that may not mean anything.
Yeah, on a similar note, Becca, I think, you know, for me, a lot of the wonderful moments have just been moments of seeing students being honest and thoughtful about their learning, and not just characterizing themselves as the letter grade that, you know, that they've always had slapped on their foreheads, but, you know, a student who has always been a hard worker in an English class, but, you know, never quite got that A because their skills weren't there, but being able to genuinely assess the fact that they put in all of this effort, and they, you know, and they did everything that they could, and that they really saw specific growth in their work, and they were proudly able to give themselves an A. Or a student who is an excellent writer and an excellent reader, and just generally an excellent student, who I had last year, who looked at the grading criteria at the end of the semester when he had to give himself a grade, and said, "Hey, I noticed that one of the criteria on here is that you don't come late to class." "I come late to class a lot." I was like, "Yes, you do." And he said, "Well, does that mean I can't get an A?" And I said, "Well, you see the criteria, you know the facts, that's up to you to figure out." And he gave himself the A-. I mean, to be fair, at that point, I think he'd already gotten into college, so, you know, maybe he wasn't too worried. But I appreciated that honesty, right? I appreciated the fact that students could, like, look at their learning and at their behaviors and be honest about it. And it also gives them the chance to feel really proud of the things that they maybe don't always get to feel proud of, because, oh, a non-perfect letter grade is going to make you think that all the effort you put in is for nothing. But to actually say, no, I did put in all of this effort. I did get something out of this. I did see growth. And I can really, you know, I can assess myself in a way that reflects that. So to me, that's really one of the beautiful things that's come up in ungrading.
Can I just add one thing to bounce off of that? I think it will be so interesting to see how students fully embrace this concept of learning in an ungrading environment, and how they apply that as adults, right? How do we view success as an adult when you're in high school or when you're in middle school and your success is measured by grades, and then you go to college and your success is measured by grades? But then eventually there's a point where your success is no longer measured by grades, right? So I think we're sort of maybe in our classrooms bringing this reality from the future of how your success will be measured, and put that accountability on the students so that then they can bring that with them and use those tools that they've built from being able to look at themselves, assess how can I be better, where do I need to grow, where am I successful, and what am I missing?
Yeah, I think also, just to add on one more thing, I think that internal motivation also leads students to feel like participants in the learning experience in a different way. So I've definitely had students seem more eager to add something to the curriculum. You know, one of the things we do is we'll listen to songs about New York City. So a student will be like, oh my gosh, I have this great song that I love about New York City, you know, in the genre of rap, which is me personally not my expertise. So there aren't so many rap songs in the curriculum. So, you know, a student shared a rap song with me that I was able to then share with the class. Or, you know, we were reading an excerpt from a graphic history of New York about egg creams. And my student said, what's an egg cream? That sounds so weird. We should make them. And so the next day, everyone kind of pitched in and brought an ingredient, and we made egg creams in class. And just kind of that spirit of, we're all here
for
to
do those of you
thing.
Listening who are not 75-year-old Jewish men from Brooklyn, an egg cream is a concoction that's like a mixture of chocolate milk and seltzer. So you get a foamy, fizzy, chocolate milky thing, and you're welcome to try this at home.
We made them. I think the verdict was, not so bad. But chocolate milk is better, so why would you ever drink this?
In the Midwest, they're called chocolate phosphates, and I did grow up with them.
but just, you know, remembering that we're all here to do something that we all find valuable and, you know, students finding ways to add their input into the curriculum is really exciting as well.
Yeah, I'm teaching a course right now, an ungraded course called Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. And actually, we spent the first half of the year studying civil liberties, individual freedoms, protections, rights you have under the Constitution. Second half of the year, we're studying civil rights, which is protections for minority groups and other groups that have been disadvantaged. And my students have been very forthright in sharing with me that they would much rather go back to the part where we were talking about how you should respond when you're stopped by the police or pulled over and why you should never talk to the police without an attorney. Then they like, you know, they prefer that much more to the second half of the year curriculum. They feel very empowered to share their voice and let me know why they think that what we're doing now is less engaging. That's been a conversation that we've been spending a little bit of time on. As we wrap, I'm just going to ask you for your last anything about ungrading. So that can be a thing that surprised you, a thing that didn't work, a thing that you're hopeful for about the future, thing that you're looking forward to trying. Any last thoughts about ungrading as we conclude this conversation? And maybe I'll start by saying that one thing I found that I was told to expect, and it still surprised me. We all read Susan Bloom's anthology called Ungrading. And one of the writers in that book says that when you invite students to grade themselves, there are going to be students who give themselves lower grades than you would have given them. And I did not believe that. Of course, every high school student is going to be as generous as they can plausibly or maybe not even plausibly be and give themselves as high a grade as they can. Every year that I've done this ungrading experiment, I have a student or students with whatever combination of their internal makeup and the circumstances that we put them in, it's so self-critical and so hard on themselves as a student, they give themselves a lower grade than I would have given them. And although I always tell my students when they grade themselves that I reserve the right to change any grade that's really wildly out of whack from what they deserve. So if a D student gives themselves an A, I'm not letting them give themselves an A on the transcript. That's actually never come up. It's never come up that a student has given themselves a grade that's so inflated that I feel the need to lower it. But three times over my 3 years doing ungrading, I have raised students' grades when they gave themselves grades that I thought were just excessively ungenerous. And that, I think, is also a window into what, at least for some students, the pressures that they're operating under, how that shifts, how they see themselves, how they assess themselves. You were saying, Becca, how they see themselves as a letter or a number, and maybe not even the letter I would have given them.
Oh, yeah, on a very similar note, but maybe kind of the flip side of that, I have had as a challenge in my courses, both of the years that I've done it, a student who gives themselves a grade that I don't think really matches up with the facts, because at the beginning of the semester, I've given them a list of criteria that they have to meet, right? These are the behaviors for which you will earn an A. These are the behaviors for which you might earn a B. I hope no one will end up here, but these are the behaviors for which you would earn a C. And no one's ever ended up in the C range, but I have had students give themselves an A minus when they haven't done all of the reading and they're showing up unprepared. And it's very explicit in the criteria that you need to be coming to class prepared. That's a kind of a baseline expectation. You really can't get an A range grade without that. So having to sit down then with these students and kind of have that discussion about what I saw versus how they assessed themselves and kind of the discrepancy there, it's a very uncomfortable conversation. And that's it's not perfect. And I think the students for whom that has come up have also been students who at the end of first semester have not yet gotten into their colleges. So the grade, right, they want to push to give themselves as high of a grade as they can possibly get away with. And I think that's one of the pitfalls of trying to do an ungraded class in a fully graded environment. And
You can't see us, but Becca and I are both nodding away. Yes, the experience of being the one little island of ungradedness in a fully graded ecosystem really both limits its effectiveness and creates other challenges, as Sarah's describing.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I think that's something, again, that I don't feel like I have a super answer for. And I don't know that there is an answer other than, you know, tear it all down, burn it down, revolution, revolution.
We're not cutting this out of the podcast. We're leaving it there. But guess what? We're not actually tearing it all down, burning it all down, or making a revolution, revolution, much as Ms. Sarah Medved might want to.
I think I was quoting you, Dr. Schwartz.
Lies, all lies. Okay, Becca, what do you got for us?
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because the way that I was hoping to wrap this discussion is really to think about what's next for us. And yeah. Last year,
That's a much more sober way of saying it than tear it down, burn it down, revolution, revolution.
Well, I've really thought about this. And last year, I think we met every week, or right. It was really almost every week or every other week, to talk about our successes in ungrading and our areas for growth. I'm not going to say our areas of failure. It was really, we talked about areas where we didn't think we were feeling as successful. And that was very helpful as like a little learning network. And I think that the biggest thing is that we are hoping and able to shift our mindsets about education and education at large. So when I first started doing ungrading in my classroom, when I first started practicing ungrading in my classroom, I thought, little change. I'm doing a little bit of change, and hopefully this will spread. And then eventually I saw the article that Rabbi Hartstark wrote in the Jewish Link about ungrading, and I reached out to him, and he connected me with you. And I was so excited to have other educators to be able to talk to about this mindset. And it really is a growth mindset, which is something that we talk about for our students. And shifting the way that we think about how our classrooms run and how our students learn and how our students see themselves. And I just hope that it's this little change that maybe we're not tearing anything down, but we're making a difference, and then eventually we'll spread a little bit more and eventually tear everything down.
Terrific. Thank you so much. This has been a really great and interesting conversation about some of the work we did, some of the experiences we had, the successes we might have found, the challenges we might have encountered along the way. Thank you so much to these two stellar educators for joining me, Ms. Sarah Medved, Ms. Becca Glassberg. Thanks for being part of this conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grand Conversation. Please be sure to visit our website, www.machonsiach.org, where you can subscribe to our podcast and find all of our work, including papers and podcasts on the grading ecosystem and on a variety of other subjects. Until next time, this has been The Grand Conversation, the Machon Siach Podcast.